The previous chapter, chapter 25, ended by explaining how Paranjana, the king, had become captivated by his wife, captivated and controlled. Because it's quite natural. One enjoys anything in this world. One gets pleasure from something of the world. And then as soon as one gets pleasure from the world, an object in the world, then naturally one develops attachment to it. And when one is attached to it, to something, then there is always the fear that one will lose that thing and therefore one will lose one's pleasure. So when we're attached to an object, or even any person, practically speaking, we're viewing that person as an object, just generally speaking. An object, and we're attached to that thing or person because it is a source of pleasure for us. So as soon as we have attachment, which comes from attaining some pleasure in this world, then we're afraid of losing it, and therefore, in a sense, we become controlled or under the control of that object or person, because all that person has to say is, I'm leaving, I'm going to withhold my pleasure from you, you're not going to be able to get pleasure from me anymore, and then immediately fear, selfish fear, enters the heart. Oh, I won't be able to enjoy this anymore. I will lose something that's dear to me. Fear enters the heart and one is placed under the control of that object or person. Under the control, if that object, if we're looking as a person, as an object. So, Paranjana fell under the control of his wife. And in the analogy, who does his wife, the queen, represent? Or what does it represent? Material intelligence. How to enjoy, not in a hedonistic, impious way, but how to enjoy in a pious, scriptural, proper way. And the benefit of pravritti marg, or the process of enjoying in a proper pious way, is that one will gradually become elevated. One becomes detached by performing acts, even for pleasure, under scriptural injunctions. The result is gradual purification of heart. This is the great benefit of being under the control of Shastra. Gradually the heart becomes purified. And purification means that passion, which is the process of, which is the cause of desires for enjoyment. Passion causes the desires for enjoyment. Instead of that being degraded into hedonistic ignorance, which is a greater covering over the soul, rather that passion becomes purified through detachment, through regulation and detachment. And then one's consciousness is more in the mode of goodness. A simple example of this type of Vedic regulation is in some of the Puranas, Shastras, meant for those in ignorance, there is a prescription for meat eating, and it entails taking a goat on the Amavasya, on the dark moon night, and sacrificing it on the edge of the village to the goddess of Kali. So if one wants to eat meat, if one has that type of a desire, if one follows the Shastra, one can do that in a regulated way. So one takes once a month, so one has to wait once a month. And if someone is very attached, that's very difficult. But he's submissive to Shastra and he controls his mind. And then on the Amavasya, on the dark moon night, he takes the goat to the edge of the village, and with the proper rituals. And the reason why he takes the goat to the edge of the village is that so the crying and screaming of the goat as he's cutting his throat doesn't disturb everyone in the village. But before he does that and performs the remainder of the ritual, he whispers in the goat's ear a mantra, Mamso, something. Anyone know that? Mamso, something. Now I am killing you. Yes? But in exchange, later on, you can have the opportunity to kill me. So just imagine you're causing this goat so much misery, slitting its throat, and you're whispering in its ear that you, I am killing you, I'm causing this to you now, but later on you have my permission to do this to me. So how many times, and he screams in the edge of the village as you, and the blood comes pouring out. So how many times will you have to do this before you realize this is not worth it? For so many days of the month I somehow survive without eating meat, and now look what I'm doing, the same misery that I'm causing him, and it is bloody misery, he's going to inflict upon me. Is this actually worth it just for some taste? When all month long I do without this and somehow I survive, yes, I like the taste, but is it worth it? Is it worth it? And the answer, gradually, as one becomes detached and purified, it comes clearly that it is not worth it. That is knowledge. Knowledge begins to take birth within the consciousness. This is foolish. I am preparing my way due to my attachment to enjoyment. I'm preparing my way for incredible suffering. Is that temporary flickering enjoyment worth the suffering? And this principle is the so much suffering worth the temporary flickering enjoyment? This principle, if one has a little bit of goodness in one, it will gradually grow and blossom, and one will stop one's terrible activities, because simply selfishly, because one doesn't want to suffer. In the same way, if a criminal has any sense, he commits a crime, and he gets put in prison. And in prison, if he is intelligent and if he's not a hardened criminal, he learns his lesson. No, I don't want to do this anymore. That's the principle. It isn't worth it. Same principle. So Paranjana is going, so the wife of the queen, excuse me, the wife who is the queen, his wife, she represents his pious intelligence to show him how to enjoy in a pious way, in a shastric way. And now we will see what happens when he neglects her. So in the beginning of the chapter, three verses together. Now there'll be so many parallel points, we won't go over them all, but they're in the purport. So the great sage Narada continued. Who is Narada speaking to? And why is he speaking to Prachini Bharishad? He's doing so many yajnas, and what is the purpose of those yajnas? Just increase his piety for enjoyment, and he's killing so many animals in that. Okay, that is the perspective. And the first thing that Narada Muni said is, you're going to have to suffer for every mistake you make in the sacrifices. And then he started telling the story of Paranjana, who was actually all of us, but he is very much like Puchini Barishat. Because he wants to enjoy his wife, or with his material intelligence, he wants to enjoy the material world in a pious way by increasing his piety. Sometimes I wonder what it would take, what price would it take to make me leave Krishna consciousness? What price? Is there a price? If someone said, like Giriraj Maharaj's father when he was a young man, he said to him, I'll give you $1 million if you leave. Or if 15, 20 or 30 beautiful women came and said, come with me. Or what? How about the kingdom of heaven? How about power, kingship? An incredibly long life. Strength. What would it take? What would it take to lure us away from Krishna's service? It sounds like a funny question in one sense, but so many devotees who are strong do leave. At a time of weakness, Maya perhaps dangles their weakness in front of them and say, is this your price? And they say, no. And Maya says, are you sure? Because it's right here in front of you. You can take it if you want. No one's looking. No one will ever know. Maya will say so many things. So if one has still some impious desires in one's heart, and one isn't strong enough in his tasting the sweetness of Krishna consciousness, and perhaps if one still has in his mind and heart a glimmer of hope that yes, I can actually gain some happiness here in the material world. Long as that hope is there, not understanding the actual nature of the material world, that it means suffering. Dukkhalayam, Krishna has stamped it officially. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It is warranted a place of suffering. But that enjoying tendency is always there in a conditioned soul. There is an inherent weakness of the soul. He is tiny. And Maya is very, extremely powerful. So Paranjana is going to get himself in a little trouble here. My dear king, Narada is continuing. Once upon a time, King Paranjana took up his great bow and equipped with golden armor and a quiver of unlimited arrows and accompanied by 11 commanders. So each of these has their allegorical meaning. He sat on his chariot driven by 5 swift horses and went to the forest named Panchaprastha. It's also, by the way, just going back to that point about having a price and being ready to give up Krishna for something. Prabhupada even once noted this. He said, so many devotees are willing to give up Krishna for a pretty face. But of course, Krishna will not give up the devotees. But Krishna will not give himself fully to the devotee either. Unless the devotee doesn't really, truly, fully, from the core of his heart, from the very center of his heart, does not want anything, will not take anything in exchange for Krishna. He only wants to serve Krishna or serve the servants of Krishna. When that is fully implanted in the heart as a burning desire, as a desire, and it's burning, and actually that desire, as we heard in the previous chapters, when that desire is burning brightly, it burns to ashes. Any of the materialistic desires, until the fire of Krishna consciousness, accompanying sweetness of Krishna consciousness, of serving Krishna, is deeply in our heart. Our renunciation of the material world is always somewhat precarious, and it is Falgu Vairagya. What does Falgu Vairagya mean? Yes. Have you been to Gaya? Of course you've been to Gaya, yes? No! How close is it to Patna? But you never went there. But there is a river, the Falgu River. Have you been? And I heard just this morning Prabhupada explain about what Falgu Vairagya is. There's a river called the Falgu River, and we say that is dry renunciation, because this river is dry. The bed of the river is just sandy. But there is water running below the surface. So if you put your hands in this dry sand, water will come up. So similarly, and Prabhupada was giving the analogy or explaining it in reference to impersonalists, that they may appear to be sannyasis and renounced, but if you put your hands in, the water of material desires come up. If you look below the surface, the water of material desires come up. Falgu Vairagya. It is dry, but below the surface, all the material desires are flowing. The only thing that can actually burn to ashes, or rather, in this analogy of the river, that can evaporate all that water, Niharam Iva Bhaskaram, is the sun of our loving relationship with Krishna burning very brightly within our heart. Otherwise, we may be renounced on one level, but when we put the fingers in the heart, beneath the sand, the water of the material desires will come out. They will be there. So therefore, it's very important to taste the sweetness of Krishna consciousness. Fagu Vairagya, not allowed. And then, what is the Vaishnava answer to Fagu Vairagya? Yukta Vairagya. So Falgu Vairagya is I renounce everything, but it's dry. And what is Yukta Vairagya? What is mine to renounce? Everything belongs to Krishna. A materialist, when he sees something, a 500 rupee note fallen on the ground, he takes it for himself. But in his heart, he'll know he's done something wrong. A jnani, this is not mine. I cannot enjoy. I'm detached. He doesn't touch it. And then someone else comes along and picks it up and puts it in his pocket. But a devotee, in this analogy, he takes that 500 rupees and returns it to who it actually belongs to. So who does everything in the material world belong to? It is neither mine nor yours. The actual owner is Krishna. This material world is Krishna, so it should be used properly in his service. But for one to do that, one has to have some sambandha with Guru and Krishna. Guru, Sri Guru, Sri Gauranga and Krishna. Because if one has no relationship with Krishna, just imagine if you were walking down the road and you saw a wallet on the ground. A wallet. In the wallet, you opened it up and there was hundreds and hundreds of... Of what?
Liras.
Liras. Francs. No, that's useless. Okay, so hundreds and thousands of US dollars. And also, then you looked and you saw, you looked at, there was a driving license inside. And you looked at it and you and there was a picture on the license and it was your dearest friend. Just by chance, you found this wallet and it was your dearest friend's wallet. And it was his money. This is my time for the jokes, not yours. Wait a second. So what? How would you feel? How would you feel? Adi. Huh? Well, how did you feel? Because you felt disappointed. Okay, but that's a different point exactly. I'm making a different point. That you saw the picture of your dearest friend. You'd be so happy. And then what would you do? You'd go to him and say, guess what? Could I see your license? And then he'd say, oh no, I've lost my wallet. And he'd say, here. Why? But if it was, but if you don't have a relationship with the person, like you didn't have a relationship with the devotee, obviously, then, all right, I have to give it back. I'm disappointed. Okay, I'll do it. Okay, Krishna, it's yours. I have to use everything in your service. All right, I can enjoy. You've certified the material world, no matter what. All right, all right. Take it. Disappointed. Such a difference love makes, relationship makes. That turns Yukta Vairagya into Falgu Vairagya. Whoops. I was just seeing if everyone was listening. Yes. Falgu Vairagya into Yukta Vairagya. That is what we're interested in. Because then, soon you may have some attachment, but soon as you see this belongs to your beloved Krishna, immediately detached and only want to use it in his service. So Paranjana, he sat down on his chariot driven by 5 swift horses and went to the forest named Panchaprastha. He took with him in that chariot 2 explosive arrows. The explosive arrows, by the way, does anyone know what they are? Yes, 2 aspects of false ego. They're explosive. I am my body and everything is mine. I am my body, Ahankara Vamudatma, and everything is mine. Yes, attachment brings envy and hatred. The chariot itself, so the chariot is the body, the driver is the Paramatma, the super soul, and the living entity is the passenger. The chariot itself was situated on 2 wheels and 1 revolving axle. On the chariot were 3 flags. The 3 flags, very interestingly, are the modes of material nature. Because if you know, just like if you see the flag on somebody's chariot, you know who's in it and what his nature is. If you know what did Arjuna have on his chariot? Yes. And Krishna? Garuda. And who else? Palm leaf. Yes? Palmyra. What is palmyra tree? Yes. So when you know, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, if you know the three modes of material nature that are affecting a person, and a wise person can see that, then you know what's controlling him, you know who he is, and you know how he's going to act. So three flags, one reins, one chariot driver, one sitting place, two poles to which the harness was fixed, five weapons, seven coverings. The chariot moved in five different styles, and five obstacles lay before it. All the decorations of the chariot were made of gold. So he is going to the forest. He's leaving his queen. Paranjana went to the forest, and he's leaving behind his queen. Who is his queen? Material intelligence, pious material intelligence. In previous times, one wouldn't have to say pious. Intelligence meant pious. But now someone could be intelligent impiously and still considered intelligent. It was almost impossible, text 4, for King Paranjana to give up the company of his queen even for a moment, because his material intelligence gave him pleasure, so it brought him proper pleasures, so he wouldn't give it up. But nonetheless, on that day, being very much inspired by the desire to hunt, he took up his bow and arrow with great pride and went to the forest, not caring for his wife. So he's giving up shastrically, scripturally oriented methodologies of pleasure. Giving up his queen, that intelligence to act properly according to Shastra, so one can enjoy pravritti mahat, sarvakama. He's giving that up for hunting. And Prabhupada, in his purport, points the finger. One form of hunting is known as woman hunting. A conditioned soul is never satisfied with one wife. Those whose senses are very much uncontrolled especially try to hunt for many women. King Paranjan is abandoning the company of his religiously married wife is representative of the conditioned soul's attempt to hunt for many women for sense gratification. So this is one. So the analogy is going in a particular direction. So giving up one's lawfully wedded wife, giving up pious enjoyment, and just acting hedonistically in the forest. Now what he's doing, what Narada Muni is doing, is telling him that one may perform sacrifices according to Shastra, but look what you are doing. You are performing one animal sacrifice, killing the animal. Another animal sacrifice, killing another animal. And then another and another and another, and you've killed so many animals inappropriately. So, although woman hunting, Prabhupada is pointing the finger at the most of contemporary society, Narada Muni is pointing his finger at Paranjana. You have killed so many animals. You're giving up piety for impiety. You're giving up passion moving towards goodness for passion moving completely in ignorance. And the result is terrible. You're acting ignorantly and you don't know how much you're going to suffer. But later on, we shall hear how much he actually suffers. Those whose senses are very much uncontrolled, especially tried to hunt for many women. King Paranjan is abandoning the company of his religiously married wife is representative of the conditioned soul's attempt to hunt for many women for sense gratification. And this is an interesting fact Prabhupada puts in here next. Wherever a king goes, he's supposed to be accompanied by his queen. But when the king or conditioned soul becomes greatly overpowered by the desire for sense gratification, he does not care for religious principles. Now, when the king goes, he's accompanied by his queen whenever he goes, because he's so powerful, he could get himself into trouble, and that type of trouble can cost him all the kingdom's secrets, or could be poisoned. Just like there was a famous prostitute who was employed. And there's also, in the Vedic time, there was this something called Vishakanya, poison. But there was a famous one, and she had, of all names, her name in history was Mata Hari. That was her name, but she was famous for a prostitute for killing kings. What a name for Mata Hari. So, because if the king is careless, doesn't have his queen there to protect him, then some beautiful woman can come and cause and kill him and ruin the kingdom. So, he does not care for religious principles when someone is greatly overpowered by the desire for sense gratification. Instead, with great pride, he accepts the bow and arrow of attachment and hatred. Icha dvesha samutena dvanva mohena bharata. This is the dualities that trap one in the material world, desire and hatred. Our consciousness is always working in two ways, the right way and the wrong way. Upward or downward. When one becomes too proud of his position, influenced by the motive passion, he gives up the right path and accepts the wrong path. And this is what Paranjana did. At that time, text 5, King Paranjana was very much influenced by demoniac propensities. What mode of material nature is that? Ignorance. Passion naturally leads to ignorance if it's cultivated, because this is the material world. So if one unleashes his desires and just decides, I'm going to satisfy all my desires, rather than attaining satisfaction, he becomes covered very deeply by ignorance, which causes misery. If anyone is not convinced of it, we have to become extremely deeply convinced of this. So there's different ways to become convinced. One, we read the Bhagavatam, okay. We hear, someone trying to deeply enjoy the material world ends up suffering horribly. And if that doesn't convince us, then we read the newspaper and Time magazine, and that should convince us, because all the exploits of personalities, now they're king, then they're in jail, then somebody's rich, and then he's found out and kills himself. And this person, this happens too, and this thing, another person happens. Horrible things, always. In one sense, it's wonderful that only bad news makes the newspaper, because it's a type of preaching, if we take it like that. Don't get involved in the material world is the message of the newspaper. Because look how much suffering is there. And if we're still not convinced that the material world in fact means suffering, then we can go and try to enjoy the material world. Good, try. Or another way, Sometimes people remain in between. Oh, I'm not convinced. Maybe it's okay. I have this desire. We keep these desires sort of hidden away where no one knows in the deep parts of the heart. But then, by Krishna's causeless mercy, what happens is the body becomes old and it begins to hurt everywhere. Every place it begins to hurt. And people start looking at you in a peculiar way when you're old. Like, I don't want to catch that disease that makes you old. And young people proudly go rolling down the sidewalks, arm in arm, thinking it's never going to happen to them, but it does. It happens to everyone who survives. So old age will show everyone this point that you cannot actually enjoy the material world. It is not possible. And even if one previously has enjoyed, so-called enjoyed, that is not solace when one is old. One doesn't think. But that's what old people do. Remember back in this year, and we did this and we did that. Because there is so much misery in the present, they can only think about the past. Very sad. Very sad when one considers what the soul is actually supposed to be enjoying. What his real life is, not his nightmarish life, but his real life with Krishna. So he was influenced by ignorance, demoniac propensities. Because of this, his heart became very hard and merciless. And with his sharp arrows, he killed many innocent animals in the forest, taking no consideration. Taking no consideration of what? Of what? The suffering of the animals. How many? There's so many fishermen in the world, and the two main way people catch fish is with the hooks. Just imagine someone having a hook in your mouth. You're hungry, and you eat some food, and someone putting a hook in the food, and then pulling you by the hook in the mouth. Just imagine. The pain, the anger, the suffering, the fear, and then pulling you up by your mouth with a painful hook. And the other way is the nets. They pull the fish out in the nets of the water, and then what do? They can't breathe. And they die like that. All flapping. Just so someone else can enjoy. Oh, I like fish. Well, if you like them, why do you kill them in such a cruel way? Why don't you leave them alone if you like fish? Sounds like you hate fish. It sounds like selfish, completely selfish. So cruel, so hard, so unconscious. So demonic, actually. So Prabhupada speaks about this in the purport. When a man becomes too proud of his material position, he tries to enjoy his senses in an unrestricted way, being influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. He is described as asuric or demoniac. When people are demoniac in spirit, they are not merciful towards the poor animals. Consequently, they maintain various animal slaughterhouses. This is technically called shuna or himsa, which means the killing of living beings. In Kali Yuga, due to the increase of the modes of passion and ignorance, almost all men are asuric or demoniac. Therefore, they are very much fond of eating flesh. And for this end, they maintain various kinds of animal slaughterhouses. In Australia, what do they call the slaughterhouses? No, they don't. Abattoir. What language is abattoir? Do the people in Australia speak French? No, and that's why they call it abattoir. Because it covers up what's really going on in there. Slaughterhouse. It means slaughterhouse, but in French. Now, why do they call it in Australia abattoir? Because it's so crude and it's so gross. Just imagine slaughterhouse. Huh? Call it abattoir? In France, maybe. I don't know.
Processing plants.
Huh?
In America, processing plants.
They're called that.
Meat processing.
Meat processing. Like abortion instead of embryo slaughter. Meat processing. How about animal slaughter? In this age of Kali, the propensity for mercy is almost nil. Consequently, there is always fighting and wars between men and nations. Men do not understand that because they unrestrictedly kill so many animals, they also must be slaughtered like animals in big wars. This is very much evident in the Western countries. In the West, slaughterhouses are maintained without restriction, and therefore every fifth or tenth year, there's a big war in which countless people are slaughtered even more cruelly than the animals. Sometimes during war, soldiers keep their enemies in concentration camps and kill them in very cruel ways and torture them. These are the reactions brought about by an unrestricted animal killing in the slaughterhouse and by hunters in the forest. Proud demoniac persons do not know the laws of nature or the laws of God. Consequently, they unrestrictedly kill poor animals, not caring for them at all. And the Christian religion, unfortunately, says that animals do not have souls. So heartless. So they can philosophically justify this cruelty. Then what's the difference between an animal and a human, practically speaking? The animals cry when you kill them. They love their babies. Even the monkeys love their babies. Even the birds feed their babies. What's the difference? The monkeys don't bleed when you cut them. They have no souls. They don't feel pain. They don't feel hunger. They don't feel thirst. They don't feel anger. They don't feel communal instincts. Then what is the difference? More intelligent, less intelligent? So are children, do they have souls? And even the Buddhists, they talk compassion, 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 compassion. And they eat animals? Where is the compassion? Where is the compassion? And to do it, to do that, your heart has to be so hard. You couldn't take a devotee and say, here's some meat, and maybe we don't want to be tested and see if we're dying of starvation or something. But just as a matter of course, if you put meat in front of a devotee, throw up, practically speaking. They get sick looking at it. Because, and thinking of what it took for this is part of a poor animal's body. How could you eat? And yet these Buddhists? So how hard and callous the heart has to be. One time Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur in Navadvip, he was walking down the road and he saw the way the Bengalis, they get by fish and they put their hands, their fingers in the gills and they carry them. So he saw someone of the Goswami family carrying a fish through the street like that. And he crossed the street just to chastise him. He said, "You are so heartless. You are so heartless." It is inconceivable, practically speaking, for tender-hearted devotees. So because of this heartlessness, people become heartlessly slaughtered by other people. And this is the wars, Prabhupada is saying. Cruel wars. In the Krishna consciousness movement, animal killing is completely prohibited. It is not accepted as a... One is not accepted as a bona fide student in this movement unless he promises to follow the four regulative principles. No animal killing, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. This Krishna consciousness movement is the only means by which the sinful activities of men in this Kali Yuga can be counteracted. And we can see why Prabhupada's books are so important and why he stressed distributing it and reading them so much, because someone reads this, someone who doesn't know anything about Krishna consciousness, his whole life can be turned around, because Prabhupada presents it so clearly, so strongly and uncompromisingly. Just like if someone finds 500 rupees, sees 500 rupees and he picks it up, if he has any goodness in him, there will some part of him will feel bad, and some little voice inside will say, you shouldn't really steal this. It's not yours, it belongs to someone else. So people in ignorance forget, practically speaking, they forget what is right and what is wrong. But if they have a little piety in them, there's some little voice in them that says, no, this isn't good. So when they hear, if they will hear these very powerful words, that little voice will say, yes, this is true. This is the consciousness. Actually, Matta Smitam Gyanam Upamanam Cha, Krishna inside will say, yes, this is true. This Krishna consciousness movement is the only means by which the sinful activities of man in this age can be counteracted. So on one hand, there is renunciation of inappropriate activities, and on the other hand, there is Krishna-centered activities. But to do this, one has to more and more and more have the sun of one's relationship with Krishna burning in one's heart. Otherwise, when one gets older, one will turn back and say, I could have done this, I could have done that, I should have done this, maybe I should have done that, I could have enjoyed in this way. But Niharam Iva Bhaskaram Narayana Parayana Agam Dhunvanti Katsnaya. All materialistic desires are burnt from their heart by the sun of Krishna, which evaporates them all like the sun evaporates the morning fog, with not a trace left. Text 6. If a king, now 6, 7, and 8 in the midst of this story, maybe, Ali, maybe you can check the commentaries, but the text 7, Prabhupada says, Narada Muni continued to speak to Puchinibarishat. But these verses are almost, they're not in the story exactly, but he's making a point. An aside. So it's an aside, called an aside from the story. If a king is too attracted to eating flesh, he may, according to the directions of the revealed scriptures or sacrificial performances, go to the forest and kill some animal. So this is Narada Muni's commentary on the story that he's told. Kill some animals that are recommended for killing. One is not allowed to kill animals unnecessarily or without restriction. The Vedas regulate animal killing to stop the extravagance of foolish men influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. So it restricts them, or kings who have to fight and kill in the battle practice on animals in a similar way that when a doctor is learning how to perform operations, he goes into the hospital where there are dead bodies and they allow him to practice on the dead bodies to build up the strength of mind, to get used to cutting open a body. When he gets used to it, then he can operate on a live body. So similarly, the kings used to practice killing animals so that when battle, time for battle comes, they are fearless and kill, can kill. So what the king was doing, unrestrictedly killing, is not according to the Vedic scriptures. So this seems to be direct preaching to Paranjana, separate from the story of it. Narada Muni continued to speak to King Prachinibharishat, not to Paranjana, but to Prachinibharishat. My dear king, any person who works according to the directions of the Vedic scriptures does not become involved in fruitive activities. They gradually become elevated because they are following the principles. But Paranjana was not following the principles. He had left behind his pious material intelligence, the following of the Shastra. He had gone to the forest and killed so many animals in an unrestricted fashion. This was not according to the Vedas. So he's actually criticizing Prachinibharishat for the huge number of animal killing sacrifices that Prachinibharishat had performed. 8. So what is the result of this whimsical? Whimsical means just, what does whimsical mean? Capricious. That's even a more difficult word. It's just the mind. Instead of the intelligence, one is supposed to follow his intelligence. And the intelligence is supposed to be like the queen following Shastra. So instead of following one's intelligence and ultimately following Shastra, the mind feels like doing it, so I do it. And then the mind feels like not doing it, I don't do it. Oh, today I feel like killing some animals. I'll go kill some animals. Oh, today I feel like doing this. I'll do that. Whatever the mind, taking the mind as if it's one's authority. And the mind's business is simply that, accepting, rejecting, accepting this, whimsically, not based on intelligence or right reason, or what to speak of Shastra, just on the whim of the mind. Oh, I accept this. I want to do this today. Oh, I want to do that. Oh, I hate this. Oh, I want. So a person who acts whimsically falls down to false prestige. Whimsy means pride. Thus he becomes involved in the laws of nature. Instead of following Shastra and becoming transcendental, he becomes entangled in his karma, which are composed of the three qualities, goodness, passion, ignorance. In this way, a living entity becomes devoid of his real intelligence and becomes perpetually lost in the cycle of birth and death. Thus he goes up and down from a microbe and stool to a high position in the Brahmaloka planet. So he's telling the king, look what you are doing. You are not following Shastra. The priests perhaps that you are listening to are perhaps telling you that yes, do this. But this is not Shastra. Shastra was what was recommended. Not killing unrestrictedly or unnecessarily, continuously. And you're going to suffer from this. You're going to get caught by karma. What he doesn't say is that I've come specifically to deliver you from a horrible future. You're suffering. Narada Muni is not gaining anything by his preaching to Prachinibharishat other than perhaps the satisfaction of knowing that this is pleasing to Krishna. We'll read from, there's a fairly long purport, we'll read from two sections of it. Just fairly close to the beginning, Prabhupada quotes from Bhagavad Gita chapter 16, which is really the conclusion of chapter 16. Yes shastra vidim utsrija vartate kama karata nasa siddhim avapnoti nasukam na param gatim. He who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims attains neither perfection nor happiness nor the supreme destination. Thus, one who is deliberately transgressing the rules and regulations of the Shastra is simply involving himself more and more in material existence in the three modes of material nature. Human society should therefore follow the Vedic principles of life, which are summarized in Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, life in material existence will continue. Foolish persons do not know that the soul is passing through 8,400,000 species of life by the gradual process of evolution. When one comes to the human form of life, he's supposed to follow the rules and regulations laid down in the Vedas. This is the way out, in other words, following the principles of Shastra. And then on the next page, in the paragraph beginning, the word manarudha. The word manarudha is very significant in this verse. Under the pretext of becoming great philosophers and scientists, men throughout the whole world are working on the mental platform. Such men are generally non-devotees due to not caring for the instructions given by the Lord to the first living creatures, Lord Brahma, living creature Lord Brahma. The Bhagavatam 5.18.12 therefore says, Harab abaktasya kuto mahaguna mana ratain asato davato bahi. A person who is a non-devotee who has no good qualifications because he acts on the mental platform. Does that really mean that he has no good qualifications? No, non-devotees have no, not even one good qualification? What does that mean? Huh? No spiritual qualifications? What else? Useless. I mean, useless? But what does it mean? It says, Kuto Mahadguna Mana. It says, Bhagavata Kinshanas. There's no good material. Did you ever think about that? No good qualification. What does that mean? Or don't we believe it really? So we don't have to think about it and try to figure out what it means. But that is a devotee. A devotee means one who is devoted. It means that, and perhaps I've mentioned this before, that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that after examining the character of Gorkhasur Das Babaji, I have understood that no one but a devotee actually has something to, like, true integrity. Integrity means I have a belief and I will follow this at all costs. That is good qualities. I will not steal, no matter how much is in the wallet that I find, I still will not steal. I will not steal when it is below 500 rupees, but above 10,000 rupees then, or I will be a that's what I was talking about before, that what, as long as we have a price that Maya can say, here, I will give you this. And we will trade whatever Krishna consciousness we have for that, then actually we're not devotees yet. We're aspiring, which is good, but we're not devotees yet. Because a devotee is fixed in his relationship with Krishna, he is getting so much pleasure from his service to Guru and Krishna. There is nothing in the material world that can lure him. There is nothing in the material world that is valuable enough. There is nothing in the material world that is powerful enough to make him break his integrity, his good qualifications. But for a materialist, everyone has a price. It's just a matter of what the price is. Because he's in the material world, he's shifting. There's no absolute reference point. Sometimes there are extremely qualified people who are very powerful in their moral principles, who may not be devotees, but they must have some spiritual basis in their life. Otherwise, they cannot resist. It has to be, and so much goodness must be there. And that's my understanding, what you said. Neither, and therefore a devotee Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ateva Shanta, he's peaceful because there's nothing he wants to squeeze from the material world due to his own satisfaction. But on the other hand, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Shakala Ashanta, they're all on the mental platform, manaratain asato davato bahi. They're all, I want, I want, I don't want, I want, I want. The devotees in Krishna's hands. That kind of devotee we want to be. A devotee. That's what we want to be. In Krishna's hands, securely, and tasting the sweetness of that. There is no other secure place in existence, in fact. That's what Prabhupada wanted to give us. That's what Narada wants to give Pachini Bharishat. But in the process of wanting to give true security, he's speaking very heavily. He's trying to break these material attachments to the bodily concept of life. Yeah, and Prabhupada. Yes, we only got up to that in that verse, Harava Bhaktasya. A person who is a non-devotee has no good qualification because he acts on the mental platform that he can be accepting one thing, but if the price is high enough, he'll give that up. No ultimate integrity. Ultimate integrity. One who acts on the mental platform has to change his standard of knowledge periodically. We consequently see that one philosopher may disagree with another philosopher. One scientist may put forward a theory contradicting the theory of another scientist. All this is due to working on the mental platform without a standard of knowledge. And then let's just go to the next paragraph. The material conditions are described in this verse as guna pravaha, the flowing of the three modes of material nature. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur therefore says in a song, Miche mayara vashe yacha beshe kacha hadu habu dububai. Why are you suffering? Why are you sometimes being drowned in the waves of material nature and sometimes coming to the surface? Jiva Krishna das evishvas karle ta aro dukanai. Please therefore accept yourself as the servant of Krishna, then you will be free from all miseries. If you accept yourself as the servant of Krishna, then you will be free from all miseries. Put yourself in Krishna's hands. Serve him. Accept mercy from him. Surrender to him. As soon as one surrenders to Krishna and accepts the perfect standard of knowledge, which is Bhagavad Gita as it is, he then comes out of the material modes of nature and does not fall down and lose his knowledge. And the final text we shall read today. When King Parajana, back to the story, so that was preaching, some preaching it seems to Prachini Bhari, said, you're not following the Vedas and the result is going to be terrible, you're acting whimsically for you. Back to King Parajana. When King Parajana was hunting in this way, many animals within the forest lost their lives with great pain, being pierced by the sharp arrowheads. Upon seeing these devastating, ghastly activities performed by the king, all the people who were merciful by nature became very unhappy. Such merciful persons could not tolerate seeing all this killing. Let's hear from Prabhupada's purport. When demoniac, just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, could not tolerate seeing this person walking down the road unconsciously carrying this fish. Why? Because he liked the taste of it. Taking part in this killing of these innocent creatures. When demonic persons engage in animal killing, the demigods or devotees of the Lord are very much afflicted by this killing. What does afflicted mean? Disturbed, pained. Yes, pained. Demoniac civilizations in this modern age maintain various types of slaughterhouses all over the world. Rascal swamis and yogis encourage foolish persons to go on eating flesh and killing animals, at the same time continue their so-called meditation and mystical practices. All these affairs are ghastly, and a compassionate person, namely a devotee of the Lord, becomes very unhappy to see such a sight. The hunting process is also carried on in a different way, as we have already explained. Hunting women, drinking different types of liquor, becoming intoxicated, killing animals, and enjoying sex all serve as the basis of modern civilization. Vaishnavas are unhappy to see such a situation in the world, and therefore they are very busy spreading this Krishna consciousness movement. The devotees are pained to see the hunting and killing of animals in the forest, the wholesale slaughter of animals in the slaughterhouses, and the exploitation of young girls in brothels that function under different names as clubs and societies. Being very much compassionate upon the killing of animals in sacrifice, the great sage Narada began his instructions to King Puchini Bahishad. In these instructions, Narada Muni explained that devotees like him are very much afflicted by all the killing that goes on in human society. Killing of the souls. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. This is a heavy section, actually. Any questions, comments? Karma. You seem to be indicating that we said it. Could well be. But also in India they were, in the Second World War, not torturing so much. Yeah, he must have been talking about that.
One devotee from Yugoslavia said that when they had war there,
The Muslims, the three groups, yeah. And yet the devotees are also pained to see their suffering. Not, but well, of course, Prabhu, you cause trouble, you get trouble. No. But there's so much of this going on right now, and we're in Sudan. Incredible things. No one even knows, practically. All over the world. Horrible. Humans. Humans? How could a human being do this? Not humans. So Prabhupada would say less than animals. Dvipara pashu, but two-legged animals, but less than animals. For no reason killing innocent people. Not humans. Yes, I did say that. If you want to return it to the owner. And just what I was saying is that for you to get pleasure out of returning it to the owner, you have to have a relationship with the owner and have some love. And if you don't have a relationship, then it doesn't bring you pleasure. So the devotees, because they have a relationship with Krishna, to use things in Krishna's service is wonderful for them, because they love Krishna. Clear? Okay, let's end. Let's not end. But it says, manaratain asato davato bahi. That means the reason why they don't have ultimately good qualities is because they're on the mental platform, which means they can accept and reject and accept and reject according to the circumstances in the material world, which is always changing. But when you have a, but when your standard is fixed, devotion to God, and this means true devotion in any religion, you won't give that up for anything. Then you're fixed. Then you're not on the mental platform, you're on the spiritual platform. You don't, not ruled by your mind, but you, but what you do and don't do is determined by what is pleasing to Krishna. No, no, because he's also just said this is never going to be allowed in the Hare Krishna movement. How can we teach it? And therefore, and he also says that the sacrifice for this age is chanting Hare Krishna only, not other sacrifices. But I remember when we were in Japan in 1970, Prabhupada sent a recipe how to take plantain, like bananas, and how to take dalia, semolina, wheat, and dip the plantain in that and put turmeric on it and then fry that in ghee. And he said the fish eaters will like that very much. And there's another recipe that we used to call Meat Eater's Delight, which is with so many jackfruit maybe, but paneer, that's what it is. So that's a better way. No, we won't participate in that. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.